Sahanavavatu, Sahanavunaktu, Sahaviryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
We're on verse 9. Does everybody agree? Naisha tarakena matirapaneya, Naisha tarakena matirapaneya, Proktanye naiva sujnanaya preshta, Proktanye naiva sujnanaya preshta, Yam tvamapas satya drutirbhatasi, Yam tvamapas satya drutirbhatasi, Twadringno bhuyan nachiketa prashta prashta. Twadringno bhuyan nachiketa prashta. Na esha tarkena matihi apaneya propta anyena eva sujnanaya prashta. Yam tvam apaha satya drittihi bhata asi twadrik naha bhuyat nachiketaha prashta. In the previous verse, in verse 8, this is Lord Yama really praising the knowledge, the sampradaya, and Nachiketas also through these next several verses. And verse 8 is when he says, I'm saying this because he's referring to this verse in this verse that we're going to do now. He says, this knowledge, Asha, this knowledge, if taught by a person who does not have the tradition, who is not well-versed, avara means the inferior, mediocre person, just a samsari, basically, as Shankara says. So, yeah, this knowledge is just taught by somebody who really doesn't have clarity, who is maybe just a samsari, who hasn't recognized the truth of it. Then that knowledge is not something that is going to be clearly understood. Suvignyaha, it can't be, because the teacher themselves doesn't really have that vision, and so it's impossible really for the student to have the vision, because it can be the self is understood. This knowledge is understood in so many different ways. Like your concept, they say, Esha is the Atma. This Atma, the knowledge of the Atma, can be and is within duality taken in so many different ways. So he says, Bahudha Chintyamanaha. It can be thought of in so many different ways. I can take myself to be the body, I can take myself to be the mind, I can take myself to be the transmigrating jiva, I can take myself to be just the physical body that dies when the body dies. I can take this Atma to be, in yoga, everybody has their own Atma, that type of thing. But so now we don't have just one concept of what the Atma is. There's as many concepts as you can possibly think of, as everybody can say. If each one of us had our own philosophy, we'd come up with our own concept of the Atma. It's just like when at school, in my non-dual class, I ask everybody, just take a paragraph, write out what you mean by non-duality. Mm-hmm. And everybody has their own idea what we mean by that. So what if I said to everybody, okay, write out what you mean. What do you think the Atma is? What's your theory? What's your philosophy? They'll write their own thing. Well, you have countless difference. That's what they have, countless. Bahudha means countless. So this is when taught by a person who themselves doesn't really know, then it's going to be thought of in so many different ways. And how can there be any clarity upon what the nature of the Atma is? Then he says, Ananya Prokte, it's only when taught by someone who is not different than that, by somebody who is that self. This is such an obvious thing, but it's also very beautiful. When you gain, if you gain self-knowledge of yourself, to me this is so profound, this is so silly, but when you gain knowledge of yourself, then you're gaining knowledge of the self that you are. You're gaining knowledge of who you are. So when they say ananya proktena, prokte, when it is taught by someone who is not different than that self, right? As opposed to this narena avarena, somebody who really doesn't know, like it can even be, it can be a pundit or just a samsari who has some philosophical position, or somebody who has studied the Vedas but academically, and says something like, well, you know, the in the Vedas, in the Upanishads, they say that the Atma is like this, you know. But on the other hand, the Sankhyas say, you know, that it's like this. And so what is the student going to say? Okay, well, what will they say to you? Well, you know, in the Vedanta, they say that the Atma is something like this, and the Sankhya, they say it's like this. And the Bauddha, they don't even have an Atma, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's that Bahudha Chintyamanaha. It's being passed on in a variety of different ways. And so where is the Suvignyeha in terms of who you are? There is none. Where's the clarity in terms of who you are? There can be academic clarity. There can be academic clarity in the sense that these people say this, and that's right. These people, if it's all third person, these people say this, these people say this, yes, these people say it, yes, these people say it. Academic clarity. But there's no self-knowledge. Whether it be self-knowledge in terms of this tradition, the one who teaches it has to know. You have to know yourself. It's not academic. It's logical and all of these things, but it's a pramana. This knowledge is a pramana. It's a means of knowledge that's meant to take the student step by step to the recognition of your own self, not some academic structure of yourself. It's an appreciation of who you are. So they say, ananya prokte, when it's taught by somebody who is not different than that. Ananya means other. Ananya, not another, not other. So when it's taught by, when this Atma is taught by someone who is not different than that Atma, right? Then, gatihi atra na asti. There is no other gati. There is no other place to land. You know, there's no. It's not going to resolve anywhere else. It's going to resolve in yourself alone. That's the gati means, where's this knowledge going to land? It's going to land only on you, not on something else, not on some sort of a concept, an intellectual concept. It must land on you. Because if you think about it, we're talking about self-knowledge here. Self-knowledge means you. So how are you going to have self-knowledge if you don't have knowledge of yourself? Right? So this idea of theoretical self-knowledge is kind of an academic exercise, but it's certainly not self-knowledge. It's self-knowledge, somebody's concept of the self in the third person. This is not self-knowledge. Self-knowledge is who are you? And then your recognition of yourself is self-knowledge. See? So it's so simple. So nice. Okay. So then he what says in this last part, he says, this self is aniyan anupramanat. It's something subtler than the subtlest. The Atma is not objectifiable to exist in time and space as an object. Since it's not objective, anu means in, it means like an atom. And when we talk about it, when we use it in the Upanishads or in the Vedanta, anu means that which is the most subtle. So you think of the most subtle thing that there is, and that which is more subtle than that, that is the Atma. So when you say aniyan, that which is the most subtle, that which is more subtle, anupramanat, then that more subtle than that which is the most subtle. So therefore, because of that, it's atarikim. Atarikim means it's not something that can be gained through logic. Logic can support it, but logic can't give it to you. Because the logic has its limitations. any type of logic or any type of knowledge that we have as human beings with the sense organs and the means of knowledge we have available to us, that logic and those means of knowledge are confined to whatever exists within time and space. So you can, if you are the proper instruments, you can probably know that which is the most subtle within time and space. Once you say most subtle, you're at the most subtle, right? So you can gain, if you have the proper instrumentation, that which is the most subtle, or the most large, if you have proper instrumentation to be able to give you that. But you can't gain what is more subtle than the most subtle, or more larger than the most large. Because the most large is already the most large, so you can't go beyond that. So what they're saying is that within time and space, we have means of knowledge. All of those means of knowledge really depend initially on pratyeksha, on sense perception, because you have to have a basis for even inference to be built. You can have layers and layers and layers of inferences, one built upon another after another on another, but the initial statement has to have a valid means of knowledge, right? In order for the initial statement to be true. If the initial statement of an inference has no pramana that can make that a valid means of knowledge, then your initial statement is just your imagination. And so you can have all kinds of inferences, correctly structured inferences, built on a faulty initial statement. See what I mean? So the initial statement itself has to be true. If the initial statement is going to be true, you need to have a means of knowledge for it. But if the initial statement is smaller than the most small, there is no means of knowledge for it in order to build an inference upon it. So here, the means of the initial statement is you. You are the initial statement. You know, there needs to be a pramana, a means of knowledge that can reveal your own nature, but your own nature is self-evident but not objectifiable. You are here as conscious being. Nobody's more here than you. Right? You are the one, no matter what you're experiencing, you are the one who is here. But you are not an object in time and space that would allow for a perception, let alone an inference. Right? If you're not an object in time and space, there's no means of knowledge to objectify you. You simply are as you are, right? But you don't have a means of knowledge to differentiate you within the creation. You don't have a means of knowledge that can say, I'm the self-evident self in which this whole creation, which illumines the entire creation. You don't have a means of knowledge for that. Because it's not like you're a light bulb or the sun or something like that. You simply are the ground of being in which everything takes place. But there's no room for inference, right? Because inference requires it requires knowledge to give you that initial statement, and then you can build an inference on it. You can't even get the initial statement from within duality. So because you already are the smaller than the smaller, larger than the largest, you are, right? But there's no place for any type of inference. And he says that because most of the schools of thought rely upon inference to get you to some sort of an initial statement, but the initial statement always exists within duality. And you can't make a jump from something that exists within duality to the non-dual because there's no relationship. Anyway, this is a big statement. So, anyway, and he goes on again. And so, in verse 9, now he says, in verse 9, which we just chanted, he says, Na esha tarkena matihi apaneya. This knowledge, this self, by logic, tarkena matihi, so esha matihi, this mati means this knowledge. And we're talking about self-knowledge, this knowledge of the self, esha matihi, feminine. Apaneya, na apaneya, this knowledge cannot be gained by logic. So, na esha tarakena matihi apaneya. This knowledge cannot be gained by logic. Prokta anyena eva. Only sugnanaya preshta. Let me get these words in order for you. Preshta means, oh, beloved, oh, dear one. So, Nachiketas. Yeah, the Lord Yama is talking to Nachiketas. So he says, hey, dear, beloved, dear one, you know. He says, this knowledge, you know, can't be gained by logic, but only by when taught prokta, only when taught by another type of person. The other type of person, by the type of person who has that pramana available to them, which is the Upanishad, which is the Vedanta pramana. Only by one who knows this pramana, has access to this pramana, can, only through that, can you know it. Because we're talking about knowledge here, you have to remember, this is kind of important. What do you mean it can only be known through a means of knowledge? Can only be known through a means of knowledge because we're talking about knowledge. We're not talking about experience, right? Now, if you can say, but the self can be experienced in any way, in many different ways. You can say that, but I would say, you know what? Actually, that's not even true. You know why that's not true? Say, well, what do you mean? Many paths lead to the same goal. The self can be experienced in many, many different ways, can't it? I would say, the self is never not experienced. It is never not experienced. It is not experienced as an object. It is never experienced as an object. It is ever present as your own being. So it's never not experienced, and it's never experienced as an object. It's experienced as your very nature. And there's never a time, ever, that it is not experienced. And so now, how are we going to have an experience of what is already completely, fully experienced? So this, now what this means, so I can have many different ways to have an experience of it through meditation, through pranayama, through all of the different breathing techniques I've learned, through all of doing japa, through all of these type of techniques. There's so many techniques that I can have an experience of myself. All of these techniques are there, and all of those techniques, and there are many of them, many paths lead to the same goal of producing a vritti, a thought modification, which can be have a very subtle, because the mind can become so absorbed and so quiet that you actually do have an experience of a vritti which is like a mirror to yourself because it is so quiet. And we have many different ways that we use in Vedanta also of bringing the mind into that state of absorption so that you can have that type of vritti which gives you an experience of yourself. But the experience of yourself that the mind gives you is a little bit different than the experience of yourself that is always there, whether you have the vritti or not. Vritti means thought modification. Whether you have the vritti or not, the self experience, me, is always there. I don't need the vritti to be me. If I don't need a vritti to come along and be like a mirror to me, then what happens? This is where everybody gets trapped here. This is where, so we need to have this vritti. So now I know myself. But the vritti keeps going away, Swamiji. I'd always be saying, the vritti goes away, you know. When is the vritti going to stay, or, you know? When will I just always be myself? When will I always be myself? This is the most ignorant question. It is the most ignorant question. But it's an ignorance we all suffer from. So it's not that I'm not putting it down. I'm just saying it's the most ignorant, and you're studying. When will I always be myself? You know, when will I always be there? What's the problem with that? Is that you always are there. Always. And not only, and it's not like this.
You are always there in full measure, fully experienced, uncovered. It is not like, this is what some of us always used to get trapped in. It's not like, you know, I know it's a really cloudy day. I'm standing there on the looking up. It's dark clouds, but the clouds are illumined and I know the sun is there. But when am I going to experience the sun? I know the sun is there, right? But I've got to get rid of the cloud so that I can have the actual experience of the sun, right? And so when am I going to get rid of the clouds? When is it just going to be a clear day so I can experience the sun? So now, who am I? Am I the sun? Or am I the person standing on the ground looking up at the sun? Who is the self here in this analogy? If you think you're the person standing on the ground, then you have to remove the cloud so you can see the sun. You're the little conscious, you're the little conscious being looking up at the sun, you know, who's the big S self that needs to be experienced. And we got to get those clouds out of the way. Got to get rid of them permanently, actually, so that I can always experience the big S self. But that's the big ajnanam. That's the big S ajnanam, ignorance. Because I am the sun. And I, the sun, am never covered by the clouds. It doesn't matter if the clouds are there or not. And the getting rid of the clouds, in fact, just think of this. I haven't recognized I'm the sun. So I'm getting rid of the clouds. And now I'm really happy because now I'm having an experience of the sun. So who's having that experience of the sun? Where's the ahankara? The ahankara is on the ground there looking up at the sun. The ahankara has not resolved into the sun. And so for knowledge to take place, for this knowledge to take place, you know, it's... it has to be... the teaching methodology, the pramana, is a type of pramana that is different from all other pramanas that we have available to us. Because all of the means of knowledge that are available to us means we have to gain an experience. It's like the experience of the sun, you know. I need to be able to see the sun. That's how we know in the world. I have to gain an experience of that, and then I have to keep that experience. That's how we think about it, you know. But this knowledge is not like that because I'm already here. So it's not about gaining an experience of me. It's about differentiating all of the experiences that come and go that exist within time and space from me, the one who's illumining it. And when I make that differentiation, then I recognize that actually no amount of experience, even the darkest experiences, don't cover me at all. Not at all. I am, as I am, illuminating that maya, that experience. And the experiences within the world aren't taking away from me, nor are they adding to me. They actually are doing nothing. But the problem is, when I have self-ignorance, then my only experience of well-being, you know, is when the clouds are gone. Because then I have a thought modification that is somewhat in harmony with my nature, you know? And so then that's what I settle for. That's what works. That's what works the best. Let me just get rid of the clouds for a moment, even though I know they're coming back. At least when I get rid of the clouds for a moment, I feel like myself, you know? But that's samsara. This is samsara. You might as well say, whenever I fulfill a desire, I feel like myself, so let me keep fulfilling those desires. So I can get this vritti, this thought modification, you know, which is like, you know, a parting of the clouds. We're parting the clouds and I get to see myself. You're not seeing yourself. You're seeing a nice, quiet vritti, thought modification that's totally clear and clean and in harmony with you and it's very pleasing, except that it always goes away.
And then when you feel it goes away, you try to catch it back. You can't catch it back. It's a most awful experience. Everything is just fine. This is me, and this is who I am, and it starts slipping away. You know? And then you don't know how to bring it back. And then you wait for the next time when you get to really be like yourself. So this, how to teach this? So the whole Upanishad, every Upanishad is a teaching methodology, you know, to help you differentiate all objectifiable, all changing experiences from this very ground of being that is me, that never changes at all. So he says, it's only by this very different type of person, and this is taught by a very different type of person, not a logician, but somebody who has this pramana eva alone, that this knowledge, then he says, yam tvam apaha, which you, speaking to you, to Nachiketas, that knowledge which you have obtained now, this is what you've asked for, this is what you've asked for. You have this knowledge now, you know, which will lead to sudjnanaya, that means to clarity. Knowledge which is absolutely clear, you know, when it's taught by, you know, somebody who knows. So, he says, and he says, sati drittihi bhatta asi. Bhatta means, bhatta is like, if you have a little child, and you just love your little, this is bhatta for a young boy. Hey, bhatta means, oh, you sweet, wonderful little boy, you know. You're just your dear little boy. So hey, but you are, because he's only 8 or 9. He's just a young boy. So he says, "Asi satya drittihi, you have such a pure resolve. Your resolve is satya. It's so true. It's so clear. Your desire for this knowledge is so strong, and it's so true." Means there's so much clarity and strength behind it, so much understanding behind this resolve. He says, Twadrit naha bhuyat nachiketaha prashta. He says, hey Nachiketas, he says, Nachiketa, you know, may all students, all questioners who have this question, may all of them, you know, be like you. He says, Twadrit naha Nachiketa Prashta, may all of those come to us. May all of the students who come to us, maybe be like you, I guess. You're such a satya dhriti. You're so clear, you know. And so now he goes on to say, what do you mean so clear? First of all, in this next verse, he talks about himself. He's going to say himself that you're much more, you that satya dhriti, that clarity that you have, it's much more than I have. Mm. So this is the verse. He says, Janamyaham shevadiritya nityam. Janamyaham shevadiritya nityam. Nahyad dhruvaihi prapyate hi dhruvam tata. Nahyad dhruvaihi prapyate hi dhruvam tata. Tato maya nachiketas chitognihi. Tato maya nachiketas chitognihi. Nityaya dravyaya praptavan asminityam. Nityaya dravyaya praptavan asminityam. Janami aham shevadihi iti anityam. Nahi adruvaihi prapyate hi dhruvam tat. Tattaha maya nachiketaha chittaha agnihi anityaihi dravyaihi praptavan asmi nityam. So now Lord Yama says, Janami, I know, aham, I know, shevadihi, you know, that this treasure, shave the treasures that I ended up getting, thinking, I know, and I knew, that these are anityam. All of them are time-bound. Even the stalam as yama that he got, I know that they're anitya. All of them are time-bound. And he says, because, nahi, he means because here,
Nahi adruvahi prapyate iti dhruvam te. Because that which is dhruvam, not subject to time, which is steady, that's something that can't be attained by things which are changing by nature. That's not possible. So I got this dhanam, I got this, and so many things came with it. But I got that all through upasana and prayers and all these type of things. And all of them I knew. All time-bound are only going to give me something time-bound. He says, tataha ben maya nachiketaha chittaha agnihi. He said that even then, knowing that, I piled up this all of the Nachiketa Agni, this special fire ritual which he passed on to Nachiketas. I performed these rituals. I performed this ritual, and I got these treasures doing the very ritual that I passed on to you. I did, by doing all of that, I got these treasures, he says. Nityahi dravyahi praptavan asmi. And having done that, I gain praptavan asmi with all these anitya dravyas, with all of these offerings, time-bound offerings. I got this nityam, what he got was what we call apekshika nityam. He got this sthana of being Lord Yama. And that sthana is what we call apekshika nityam. It has relative eternality. It will last as long as the kalpa. As long as the creation is manifest, until it goes into pralaya, into unmanifest condition, he will have this sthana as nitya. As Lord Yama. So I said, you know, I did this Nachiketa Agni, the one that I've given to you. I did all of that using all of these time-bound dravyas, all of these time-bound offerings and things. And so I got, you know, in some ways, as he'll say in the next verse, like almost the most that you can get, you know, within this creation. But here I am now as Lord Yama, and I'll be going to be here for a really long time. So now when Swamiji tells this story, he'll say something like, you know, it's not so nice to be Lord Yama. And now Yama's got knowledge, you know, because he's teaching, he has the pramana, he's going to teach Nachiketas this knowledge, because Nachiketas saw through all of this. That's why he thinks, you are so much better than me. Yama says, I went for all of this. I did this Nachiketa Agni, you know. And I got this sthana, which I will have for a really, really long time. So it's kind of like, I'm stuck here. I'm stuck here now for the longest time. And what do you think people think about Lord Yama? Do you think that people want Lord Yama to be around? So Swamiji said, thank God, speaking for Lord Yama. He said, thank God I have so much vairagya that I can withstand the rejection. Because nobody really wants me to come around. As soon as they see me, they're afraid. Because nobody really wants to die. They see me. They know it must be their time. So they're not really looking forward to seeing me. And so even though I have all of these things, I have so much, you know, have it for eternity, as long as the creation is up before the pralaya, still it's a long time to have to be Lord Yama. You know? You were smarter than me, Nachiketas. That says, you were smarter. I think you're amazing. What a wonder you are. That's what he says. So then, okay, we'll do one more. So then he talks more about this. What he could gain. What it is that you can gain within duality. What's the highest state that you can gain? So he talks about this. Kamasyaptin jagatah pratishtam, kritoranantyam abhayasya padam, stoma mahat urugayam pratishtam drishtva, stoma mahat urugayam pratishtam drishtva. Dritya dhiro nachiketo chisrakshihi. Dritya dhiro nachiketo chisrakshihi. He says, Kamasya Aptim Jagataha Pratishtam Kratoho Anantyam Abhayasya Padam Stoma Mahat Urugayam Pratishtam Trishtwa Dritya Diraha Nachiketaha Atyasrakshihi. He says, Kamasya Aptim, that the Kamasya Aptim is like the what is the farthest you can go with a desire? What is the end of desire? What is the farthest point that you can take a desire? The most fulfilled that you can be is the idea. What is the most fulfilled that you can be from desire itself? So what is the final end of desire? How far can it go? Kamasya Aptim, he says, so some just say like the end of all desires. What is the end? You know, what is the, how far can you go? That's the Kamasya Aptim. Jagataha Pratishtam, that which is the very basis of all of the worlds, of the whole universe, the whole Virat, this whole waking state, this Virat. What is the Pratishta of that? What is the basis of that? Okay. Then he says, that which is the basis of that, Kratoho Anantyam, that limitless, the limitlessness that can be gained from Kratu is both ritual along with upasana. So they're doing the rituals with the upasana, the tremendous punya, which is abhayaparam, which is that which is on the other side of fear, abhaya. It's the abhaya means fearless. That the farthest you can go in terms of abhaya within this creation. So what they're, let me just give the rest of these, and then I'll tell you what they're talking about. Stoma means that which is most praiseworthy. Mahat, which means that which is infinite in size, contains everything in it. Urugayam means that which extends infinitely, infinite expanse. Pratishtam means that state. So let me, drishtva, so having seen. So let me tell you what they're talking about. With upasana and ritual, you know, yajna and upasana, you can actually attain, the highest you can go is to attain the state of Hiranyagarbha. That means that you can actually, as a jiva, attain that state of abiding as the whole infinite sukshma sharira of Ishvara, right? So that your being is that of Hiranyagarbha. That's as far as you can go in terms of ritual and upasana and punya, accruing tremendous amount of punya. So that's as much as you could possibly hope to get. And now Yama gave him that with this Nachiketa Agni. That he and also because of being a Dharmanishta, this came earlier when you're doing, because he's such a young boy, he's so pure, he's so rooted in Dharma, his pratishtha, he saw that all of this is available to him. Yama gave him all of this and made this clear. So now Nachiketa has seen that his race state, his pratishtha, what he can have if he wants, he can be Hiranyagarbha. You know, he can have that whole, take on the whole form of Hiranyagarbha. The farthest as you can go, the one who is the very kind of stanum place for the pratishtha, the basis for the whole creation. It's like if you have a, say if you have a thought in your mind, right? The fact that you can have that thought itself is the pratishtha. In the creation, if we look at the subtle level of the creation, that's the pratishtha of the physical world, right? The subtle world is the pratishtha or the basis, not Brahman, but the thought itself, the sukshma sharira, the subtle, the what we call tajasa and what we call Hiranyagarbha, the total. So that you can actually gain. And now Nachiketa is seeing that I can gain that. I can be Hiranyagarbha. I can have this whole thing. I can have, nothing can touch me. You know, the sukshma sharira also, it never dies. Physical world, there's birth and death. You know, the Sukshma Sharira, there's no birth and death. That all belongs to the physical world. And so for me, as Hiranyagarbha, there's no abhaya, there's no fear. Nothing can touch me at all, except that it come to an end at a point, right? But Nachiketa saw, I can have all of this. So he saw it clearly because Yama had told him all of this. So having seen all of this, then dhritya dhiraha, he says, hey Nachiketas, you were dhiraha, you have so much viveka and dhriti. Dhriti means, you know, courage and fortitude. And the viveka, tremendous viveka, you gave up the most that anybody could have. You gave up that without blinking an eye. In fact, earlier Shankara says, you just remained like a clear lake and without a ripple. As I was offering all of these things, nothing happened to you. We go, oh, well, now. Because they, oh, well, now that, I don't know, that looks really interesting. No, nothing happened. And so Yama noticed, nothing has ever happened to you as I've been offering all of these things. I offered you the most that a person could have. And you, he said, hey, Nachiketas, you were atyasrakshihi. You completely gave all of that up. You completely renounced that. Completely renounced means there wasn't a ripple. Nothing happened. There wasn't a ripple. So with so much courage or so much clarity, having so much viveka, I'm offering all of this, having shown you all of this, you saw it all. Nothing happened to you. You had no desire whatsoever. That's amazing, he says. So we'll stop there. Pretty soon, it was, yeah, that's good. We did good. He's going to go on for a few more verses. Crazy me. Swasti prajabhyah paripalayantam nyayena margena mahinmahishah ko pramanebhyah shubhamastu nityam lokasamasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parajanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam kshobharahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukha bhak bhavet Asato ma sudgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityor ma amatam gamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.
Are there many other Nachiketas in this Vedantic tradition?
No, there's probably plenty.
There has to be.
But they don't come. Huh? They don't come in droves. But there's sample Uttama Adhikaris. Uttama Adhikari is the one that just it's their mind. They're just ready. They've been through all the stuff, all the things that we have to go through to gain that viveka and vairagya and all of that and all of the. Ashuddhis that have really been worked all that out. So they're just ready. They're just ready to hear. Hastamalika is a good example, one of Shankar's little young students that came to him when he was about 8 years old.
Yeah.
So there's nice stories about Shweta Ketus and Chandogya. He came as kind of a little spoiled brat, and his father had to straighten him out.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also very ready.
I had a question, but it was mostly based on a question I had on Sunday, but
okay. Okay.
About desires, because I've been thinking about it for a few days. You were saying on Sunday that if you have a desire, it's perfectly okay to go after it within reason, as long as it doesn't...
Dharma,
exactly. But I'm having a hard time understanding if the engine of a desire isn't thinking that you're going to be happy by getting this thing, then what is it? It doesn't seem like a desire to me anymore.
Well, that's why we call it the Dugdha Bija, it's a burnt seed. Because, you see, there's no possibility in this creation as long as you have a body, mind, sense organs. Everything is really motivated by desire, even to go get a drink of water, you know, decide to get married, decide to, you know, read a book. Everything is motivated by desire. So we look at the desire in two forms. The true desire template for an Ajnani, because it doesn't have self-knowledge or it's not a mumukshu, whatever, is I want this so that I can be happy. That's the desire template. Or I don't want this so that I can be happy. Okay. At some point, I want this, the desire template falls apart. Because you realize, you gain knowledge, even before it's totally mature in that knowledge, that really the ananda, the happiness, really has nothing to do with the desired object. It has only to do with the shantavritti that takes place the moment you fulfill the desire. Right? Because then it's like the clear water bucket and you feel happy. But until you know that, your ananda is continually projected onto situations in the world. You can see this, once you understand this, you just see it all the time. And yet, initially, even though you know it, you still want that. And we expect that you still want it, even though you know the whole desire template, you know, and what's going on. But still, that pravritti is there. And so with the karma yoga buddhi, we say, that's all right. If there's nothing really wrong with the desire itself, as long as it's within dharma, it's not like a big evil monster or something. What is wrong with the desire is the pain that it causes you. So if you can fulfill the desire because you have an energy for that, which could be part of your prarabdha karma also, or something you've picked up along the way, if you really have a strong inclination, instead of trying to swallow it or push it away or go through all these machinations when really there's nothing wrong with the desire, fulfill the desire and accept the results as prasad, with that prasada buddhi. Because if you accept the results from the Lord, which is the most reasonable, I mean, if you think that you have control over the universe to the extent that you can actually fulfill all of your desires, most of us don't think that. You have to be a mental case to think that, or just a little child to think that every desire you have, you know, you can fulfill it no matter what. We know that we can't. You know? And so say, accepting that, and yet you want to do that, go ahead, go for it, and accept the results as prasad from Bhagavan. That way you're always in relationship with Ishvara. You're not thwarting your energy, you know, and you're not putting a curse on desires, which is meaningless, because then you lose all of your energy to do things. You know. But how do you relate when Bhagavan says no? You know? It's just, if you say okay, that's okay.
Well, how do
and let me try again then. You can say, let me try again.
How do you accept these results as prasad? I mean, you know.
Because it's part of it is just in light of this knowledge and recognizing that you're the karta in terms of choosing to do the action. But you're not the karta and what we call the karma poladatta, the one who gives the fruits of the action. There's too many variables. So it's also an understanding of karma. You know? In the end, as you kind of mature in your knowledge, the desires you end up doing are just your prarabdha karma. Because they're there, they're doing, they're being done. They just are happening. They're part of your life. You're not going out looking for this desire to fulfill this one, that one. You don't care that much. Because you don't need to fulfill those desires for your ananda. You don't do that anymore. But initially, they have much more reality for you. So the thing is to take the curse off of them, because there's nothing wrong, really. What's wrong is my response. So if I change the response, you know, then it's fine. You keep your relationship with Ishvara. You know, and your mind keeps the shanti, and at the same time you have energy. And then later on, you just enjoy, most of those desires fall off over time, they just don't come up. And so then you more enjoy just living your life and doing what's right here to be done right now. It's like the life you have is the life you desire. This is fine. This set of things is fine, and this set of things is fine. Let me just deal with the things that are here. As Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, we just say everything is Ishvara, and you just do your dharma in every situation. But why think that it's bad to fulfill a desire? Then you have to think a little, push that a little bit, and say, well, I think it's bad because it can cause me pain. There's nothing bad in and of itself. You see that?
Yeah, it makes more sense to me as like a stage of development.
It is a stage of development, yeah. But you don't want to rip open the flower, you know? And also, it's not fair or true, really, to think of that the desire is wrong. You know? On one level, it's sort of like breathing, because without any desire, your body couldn't move, nothing would happen, you know. So that's not the problem. The problem is its association with your ananda. And that keeps falling off. That's where the ajnanam is. I want this so that I can be happy. So there's a real strong relationship between the fulfillment of the desire and my well-being.
Yeah.
That's the ajnanam.
Yeah.
There, yeah.
It just seems to me that, like, they're synonymous, that, like, a desire is that wish to be fulfilled and happy. So it's hard for me to see having a desire without that. You know what I mean?
Sure. But the thing is, I do see what you mean, but that's how it is now for you. But if you think a little, push it a little farther, what about a jnani? Somebody really has self-knowledge, is rooted in that knowledge, and they do this, and they do that, and they do this, they read this book, not that book, they like Italy's and Swamiji will joke, they like Italy's instead of chapatis. All these preferences are there. You know, they'd rather go here than there. Those are all desires. But the jnani doesn't care at all. I want to go here, no, I'm sorry, we have to go there. Oh, okay, that's fine, that's another. You know? So you have this body. You took this birth, okay? So that's the big ajnanam right there. That you took this birth in the first place. Then this birth will take you all the way from birth to death by the prarabdha karma. Okay? The prarabdha karma is going to, all of the movement and the dance that you find yourself in is riddled with desire, because that's the energy that keeps you going. But as the ajnanam is removed, you're still fulfilling all kinds of desires, you know, like what I do in this moment. But this needing to do it for your well-being, it's like, happily I do that. You know? Happily, not for happiness. And if I don't get my way, I don't get my way. There's somebody that is feeling that I haven't lost myself, because you've already known yourself and nothing happens to you, ever. That's the other thing. You become... The mind is attached to your being, which does not increase or decrease with the absence, with the fulfilling or non-fulfilling of the desire. It's not like when you fulfill a desire, all of a sudden your little self goes, ah, and then you don't fulfill and it goes, mm. No, none of that ever happens. Nothing happens. And you become much more attached to the very beautiful ananda of your being that doesn't come and go. Not to the vrittis. You're not attached to the vrittis. The vrittis have a lot of range from dark, dark, deep, dark vrittis to, you know, joyful, happy, blissful vrittis. There's a whole big range. And you lose your attachment to those vrittis. You don't care what the vrittis are. It doesn't matter. Because they don't compete with your own being. With the beauty of your own being. Your own being isn't on a ride like this. It just did it. You are what you are, you know. And there's nothing that can, the vrittis, the range of vrittis, that can't compete with your own nature once you recognize it. And that doesn't mean that the clouds are going to part so that you can recognize it. Because that beauty is there right now at all times. It's not all of a sudden you're going to mature into some state where the beauty of yourself becomes manifest. The beauty of yourself is already completely manifest. Completely manifest. It's just we haven't noticed it. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. Because we have, our mind is only used to learning in our normal way of having to gain an experience and then learn about that object of experience that we know, you know, experience that. But that's not what's happening here. Yourself is already in all of its subtle, very beautiful, gentle beauty, completely present. But the mind is so much focused, it takes that for granted, doesn't give it any attention, you know. It's only focused on the mental states, not on the me. The me is completely taken for granted, but once it recognizes, wow, I'm here. What am I like? You know, then the one who's always here gets some attention. And then you recognize, gee, I mean, there's never a time that I haven't been here. Ever. And there's nothing more beloved than my own being. That has to be recognized by the mind because the mind's so lost in its own web of experience. And there's nothing that can be more taken for granted than me because I'm always here. Never not here. The mind is continually shifting with all kinds of moods and emotions and experiences and desires and all kinds of stuff, all stuff going on all the time. All with me silently there with that little kind of gentle smile, you know, that you see in the Murtis, like so many you see in the Buddha, that gentle, beautiful, gentle smile, or Dakshinamurti, that's always there, but it's overwhelmed, sitting there quietly, not making any problems for anybody.
Not doing what?
Not causing any problems for anybody, not perturbed, not disturbed in any way, but the mind is all caught up in the samsara, so creating a lot of tumultuousness. And you just have to stop for a minute, you know. And then what happens is your own presence becomes more to the forefront because the mind becomes more interested in you, you know.
Well, that almost sounds like the plight of all humanity. I mean, it's a thrill.
Yeah, the only thing is that dharma, that's where the whole, in religions, not just the Vedas we're talking about, but in religions themselves, all the value systems, all of our value systems are meant to bring the mind, give a certain dharmic discipline to the mind so that it enjoys more shanti.
Yeah.
As it enjoys more shanti, you feel so much more at home, at peace, because the mind is more like a still water bucket, you know? And so your own presence becomes more just reflected in the mind, so it's not competing with you. You know, so that's why And the Vedas, in the first part of the Vedas and the Vedic life, is really just meant for Antakarna Shuddhi, bringing the mind into that natural peace. And then with that natural peace, one can gain knowledge of the very Adhishtana, that the very basis of them. Yeah. That makes sense.
Following up on this, it sounds like what you're saying is that there's still, even if you don't need something to be happy, like, for example, a glass of water, you can just still feel thirst.
Yeah.
There's still some kind of wanting happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, if it's going to be another half hour before you get a drink, there doesn't need to be a temper tantrum.
Of course, bodily needs are something that the body just needs to take care of.
And then there are psychological ones, and there's all kinds. I just picked that as an example.
I'd say what we call titiksha, the shama dhamma upadati titiksha shuddha samadhan, these qualities, that titiksha really is the mind's patience, the ability to endure the opposites, the ability for things, that things don't always have to be fine just the way you want them. That all of the polar opposites that the creation is very, very easily will throw your way, as okay. It's not like you're not expecting it to do that. You're not asking much of the creation, actually.
You're not asking much, but there's still some kind of wanting that happens.
That's right.
And connected with that wanting is wanting a result, which is going to be make you happy. It's just that it's not. I mean, it's going to resolve some issue, but it's not as big of a deal.
That's right, because you have it superimposed yourself on.
But it's not like we become desireless.
No, you never become desireless. But the thing is that your fulfilling of the desire is not, your well-being is not dependent on it. But that's another myth, problem to think that you're going to become desireless. When you have a body, mind, it's not going to happen. But your well-being is not dependent on it. That's why they say the desires remain, but they're dagda bijas. Dagda means burnt bijas. See, they're burnt seeds. I mean, they can't sprout all of this misery. But it doesn't mean there's not a desire there. And it doesn't mean I want this. I have a certain thing that I want to be pleasurable. But if I don't get it, it's okay, because I just am no longer superimposing my own well-being on that, so it has a whole different quality. It's a lot of freedom. Then it's not scary to have a desire, because you're not afraid not to get your way at all. Nor do you think that you're entitled to get your way all the time also. I have a desire there, so it should be fulfilled. You can try for it.
But nonetheless, you deserve the minimum, right?
Well, Swamiji said once, and it's always stuck with me, he's talking about something personal that I'm selling. He said, I get what I deserve. He said it was a teaching moment. I was there and the other people were there.
Mm.
He said those kind of things before, but it just somehow the way he said it just really struck me. We get what we deserve. It's our karma, it's our karmapala. It is what it is. So you're ananda. No matter what you get good things and you get bad things, you get a whole slew of all different things. But nothing's happening to you. Yourself is not getting something or getting something. And you have to start. The mind gains more and more nishtha and more settled just in your own being. So settled in yourself, you experience the world. Yourself is not changing. It's not getting better with fulfilled desires, and it's not getting worse with unfulfilled desires. You're just what you are. And that's something very, what you are is something very, very beautiful. It's something you can improve. It's the nature of yourself is something you can improve upon. That's nice. It's nice not to be able to improve upon it. Then the go-getters all really can relax. Yeah.
even if the mind says something different about it.
Then you can talk to your little mind and it'll be okay. Mind has to be changes over time in the light of your knowledge. Just like with that, forget about Vedanta, just growing and maturing as a person. Your mind and expectations change, and the way you talk to others and the way you talk to yourself changes. Just with psychological maturity, and this is taking it up a notch with the maturity that this knowledge brings. Are we done?